It's a brave man who would say to say nothing of the men and the children. But that's what Matthew put together, therefore, the recording of that miracle of the loaves and the fish. Now, some people might say, I thought there were seven loaves and another number of fish. And they would be correct, because that was Matthew's first record of the miracle account. If you look in Scripture, you will find that there are actually six accounts of the feeding of the multitude with the loaves and the fish. Matthew has two accounts and Mark has two accounts. Luke has one and St. John has one. And they do vary a little bit. There is some commonality there between the numbers. But they do vary a bit. For example, there were 5,000 people at this. This was men. Women and children weren't counted. Because in a public display or a public coming together, the women and the young children wouldn't be able to sit with the men anyway. So if you looked at it and just said there were 5,000 men, then you would have at least 5,000 women, and you'd probably have at least 5,000, if not more, children. So you could easily say there'd at least be 15,000 people there, a stadium full. So this is a serious miracle. But then in another account, you'll see that there were only 4,000. It's a bit like us last night working out whether there were 100 people in the church or not. Luckily, I had flat battery in my calculator, but it all worked. One account says, Matthew says there were 5 loaves and 2 fish. Other accounts say there were 7 loaves and some fish. Some accounts today were told that there were 12 basketfuls left over. Another account says there were 5 basketfuls left over. So do not get all caught up with, well, which is the right account? That is not the point. The point is that this miracle, from the hands of Jesus, not from the people, but from the hands of Jesus, this miracle took place. Now, whether you believe in miracles or not, if you say you don't believe in miracles, then you are also saying that the saints in the church are not saints. Because by virtue of the miracles that they have assisted in, they have become recognised as holy women and men. But the church, from the earliest times, recognised this miracle. This wasn't some magic mystery with numbers. This event occurred. It is the only event that is recorded in all 4 Gospels from the earliest times. The only other events that are recorded in all 4 Gospels are actually the Passion, the Death, and the Resurrection of Jesus. So the church understood, or the community that became the church, understood the significance of this miracle event. And it was connected with the foundation of the church through the Passion, Death, and Resurrection of Jesus. That's the only reason that we could explain why have all 4 gospel writers got it in there. The way that they use numbers is simply to reinforce their own theological emphasis. For example, John uses it as part of his collection of miracles, which he calls glory. He says, he let the glory of God be seen. That was what the miracle meant. 7 times that happens in John's gospel, of which this is one account, the feeding of the crowd. 7 is the number that keeps recurring. 7 and 12 keep recurring. 7 always takes us back to creation, and 12 always takes us back to the 12 tribes of Israel. So for Matthew, Matthew's gospel is hinged on the relationship between Jesus, the new creation, after the seven days, the 8th day is the new creation. And Jesus is intimately connected with Moses all through Matthew's gospel. So the next thing you'll read in Matthew's gospel after this account is the transfiguration, where who appears? Moses appears. So Matthew goes to a lot of trouble to make sure that the old is connected to the new. That's why we've got 12 baskets left over. So we look at the journey of Moses leading the people out of Egypt to find the promised land. They grizzle and complain at one stage because they have no food. Then Moses prays, and then they get what's called manna, which is like a light, floury bread. That from manna from heaven, and the people are fed with this bread, Panis Angelicus, the bread of angels. And today, the same story or the same language is being used. And for our first communion children here, in a moment, I'm going to be doing exactly what Jesus did. You won't get fish, but we take the bread and the wine, and Jesus lifted up the gifts and he blessed them. And then he gave them to the disciples to feed the 5,000. Jesus did not give communion, as it were, to the people himself. He was communion. So the disciples had to do that. And so as I taught the children in either their first or second time when we came together preparing for Holy Communion, we said that Jesus is present in four ways in the Eucharist. And the first is by you, the people. You are the disciples. He is present because of you and in you. That's the first way. The second way is through his word, through scripture. This is our Google Maps for life. This is what leads us to communion. So Jesus is recognised in you and in the word. And then thirdly, he's recognised in the bread and the wine and water that is brought forward. That becomes, after consecration, the lifting up becomes his body and blood. And the fourth way that Jesus is present is by through the action and the person of the priest, acting in the person of Jesus. Those four ways. So it's not just about the miracle that takes place here. It is about all of us being involved in it. And that's what this gospel is very much about. Some people have confused this gospel, the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000, or the crowd is probably a better way to say it, by emphasising that it's a gospel about sharing what we have. That is not even mentioned in the gospel. That comes as a result of communion. So these children and all of us who receive communion this morning, we learn to share, we learn to take what we have received out into the community. And that's why Jesus says early in the piece here, feed them yourself. We cannot do that until we have received his body and blood with us. Otherwise, we're just social workers doing good things. And that is good. And that's not a criticism against social workers. Not at all. We are disciples of Jesus. And our task is to take what we have received and to give it to those that do not have it. Now, we'll do that in many and varied ways. I don't know what mystery will unfold before these kids. How are they going to become a disciple of Jesus? Those two boys I've got ring marked to become priests. Don't get scared, guys. Pay's lousy, but the benefits are out of this world. But we don't know. But we have people here providing music for us. We give back in many and varied ways. There are people who wipe down the pews. There are people who take communion to the sick and to the housebound in the parish. There are people who unlock the hall and put the kettle on. There are people who welcome. There's all sorts of things that we can do to become the disciple, to feed them. It's not just about bread. Not at all. It's much more. The bread is, in a sense, a living symbol for something much, much greater. That miracle continues. What your role is and what your role, where these children will become, you know, is part of the mystery. But unless we get it right here, if they don't experience it properly here, we will never get it right out there. And so that's part of the fallacy when people say, I don't need to go to church to pray. The community, we are weaker and poorer when our people are not with us. That's one of the real struggles through this virus time. We are the poorer. When we are together, we receive together, we get our strength and we get our blessing, and we go and feed. Feed them yourself, Jesus told us. That's what this miracle is about. He understood that they were hungry. He said that they were hungry for 3 days because they followed him, which meant that Jesus was hungry for 3 days too. He never got a chance to go to IGA or Woolies to top up. He would have been hungry too. He was also mourning the loss of his cousin, John the Baptist, who was just beheaded at Herod's palace just before this. So the things that you experience in your life, Jesus knows about, because he too has experienced them. So when he asks us to become a sharer in communion, to feed those that are hungry, for whether it be physical or spiritual hunger, he understands the challenges that come with that. But there is a role for all of us. Please, at this time, as we reflect on this greatest of miracles, try and work out what our individual roles are. What can we do? There is a task for all of us, even if we're mourning or even if we are hungry. Our feet are sore because we've walked for 3 days with him. There is a task for us. As the dust on this miracle clears, I hope we all get clarity about what my particular role as a disciple can be and is going to be.